le bicycle, cela veut dire la bicyclette.
Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. The concept is pretty simple. Two wheels, pedals, a chain, and a frame. But within that mix of parts, it turns out there's a lot of room for art. Quite a lot of room, actually. Even a basic bike can be a work of art. Art that can also take you to work or down a wooded path.
Trek Bicycles has been designing bikes from its headquarters in Waterloo, Wisconsin, since the 1970s. In those 40-plus years, the company has placed itself on the cutting edge of both bike technology and design. Both those attributes are on display through August in an exhibit at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend.
Joyride Designing Trek features an extensive range of bikes, from Alberto Contador's Tour de France winning road bike to the fat tire bike that Cedarburg native Eric Larson rode to the South Pole, to the fantastical and whimsical bikes that are conceived and built by Trek designers and artists.
I had a chance to visit the exhibit and sit down with four members of the Trek bicycle team, Steve Bauman, Ben Fullerton, Kurt Hegland, and Eric Maves, along with collections and exhibits curator Graham Reed of the Museum of Wisconsin Art, who explained more about the exhibit.
One of the things, and this is the second time we've done this, is last year we did the Florence Eisman children's clothing. So what we're doing is we're looking at some of the most creative companies that are that were started here in Wisconsin, that are based here in Wisconsin, but whose products actually reach global audiences. And for children's clothing or for bicycles, it's aesthetics are a huge part of their business. And so bicycles can be very utilitarian, but they can also be beautifully utilitarian. Nobody wants to ride an ugly bike. And I think we've shown that with the exhibition. We've got a mixture of production models, but we've also got the art bikes, which were created by Trek staff, really for themselves, kind of pushing the limits of their creativity and design.
Can you talk about this exhibit from a display challenge? Because you have the bikes residing in among art and form, from furniture to oil painting.
Well, I think when people come into a museum, they kind of have an expectation of what they're going to see, and they are assuming that there are certain artistic, aesthetic color choices of color, pattern, subject matter, and then all of a sudden to put a bicycle next to it. And as we were walking through the galleries, you could see that we took quite a bit of time and effort to try and find the right bike next to the right paintings or the right pieces of sculpture. And I think they kind of speak to each other, or they resonate with each other.
I know you have an existing interest in the bicycle in its utilitarian sense, but what is your interest in bicycles as art itself?
Well, I think they are art. I mean, we were talking about the fundamental design of a bicycle really hasn't changed much in over 100 years, but certainly the materials that are used, the technology that's involved not only in the production of the bike but also in the mechanicals of the bike. They're just constantly evolving. I mean, if you come to the exhibition, you can see one of the first Trek bikes from 1976, and then 6 feet away, we've got a bike from basically 40 years later. And to use I don't know if this is a great analogy, but a car analogy, the 1976 bike is like a Model T, and then the 2018 bike is like a Cadillac Ferrari.
Well, and I want to bring some of you gentlemen from Trek in on this question here. At what point does Trek begin to recognize the possibilities of the bicycle as kind of a canvas?
When people walk into a bicycle shop, they want to begin an experience beyond just purchasing something and even riding something. They want to connect emotionally. And so that experience becomes our canvas, and it extends from the bicycle to all the other accessories that people are interested in and the shop itself. We really try to create a continuous feel across all those touch points.
Is it like the idea of the bicycle as an extension of the rider?
It's an extension of the rider and the environment. And of values, actually. When people look at a piece of art or a well-designed product, they want to identify with it at a pretty personal level.
Well, and I had a question for you because you're essentially the historical curator to this. Walk me through how that became what you do. What, you know, your connection to the bicycle as art.
I guess my entire life I've kind of looked upon bikes as being art or opportunity for art. I've never owned a truly like custom bike or stock bike. Even my very earliest bike, it was just a old department store bike hand-me-down from a relative that my father and I completely customized. And yeah, that's where it started for me. And it's obviously advanced and throughout the years. It's to me, bikes are art. It's functional art. And it's meant to be personal, should be personal. It's great that there's kind of a movement of late where more and more of the buying public, they're looking for something personalized. So we have options within the brand line that make it easy for that to happen.
Well, and the question that occurred to me as I was looking at many of these bikes is this a little like fashion that, you know, you look at the fashion pages of the New York Times and, you know, some of the really flashy clothes aren't necessarily meant for most people to be able to go out and buy, but they inspire the next round of design that connects more with maybe closer to average people.
We are on the fashion spectrum, for sure. We're not the runways of New York or Paris, but we're also not the aisleways of a department store. We do recognize internally that we are in the fashion business. We keep track of what is happening on the runways. We keep track of the colors and the materials and the patterns and really the values and the theories that emerge from those places. And eventually, after enough time passes, they do appear in the sporting world, and that's where we take advantage of it.
Right. I wonder, there are a couple of Alberto Contador's bikes here. There is Fabian Cancellara's bike. There are a number of bikes that have been ridden by high-level pros across cycling disciplines. How much of what they do on their bike, how much attention do you think the average person is paying to the bike itself? How important is what Alberto Contador's bike looks like to what you do?
There's a segment of our audience, our rider base, that pays intense attention to what the pros are doing. You can see it any Saturday morning or Sunday morning when that group of replica riders goes past your house at 25 miles an hour. That experience of being a pro or looking like a pro or getting to use the exact same equipment that a pro gets to use is a really fun experience, and it's pursued by a lot of people, and we love those riders.
Yeah. The thing that can be different than, let's say, in the Formula One industry, where you might idolize it and watch it on the race, and you might buy equipment that's inspired by that, but riders can go out if they want to spend the money on it and buy the exact same bike, the same gear, ride it in the same way that the pros are.
Yeah, kind of playing off the same thing with motorsports and Formula One. There's the old reference, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. The same thing can happen for us as well, especially for those true cycling fanatics, the guys that really get behind a particular team or rider. If a product is available that they're riding, you know, they're going to want it.
Well, so from a practical standpoint, what are the complexities in being able to use the bicycle as your canvas? What does it take to be able to actually, you know, take a design that, you know, we talk about the triangles that every bicycle frame or practically every bicycle frame has and do something with it that maybe no one has ever done?
Well, it's a pretty complex symphony of steps and processes where, you know, a concept can come up from one of our senior designers and then it gets the green light to go into production, And then it's a matter of the support staff and the graphics team to emulate that design across a full size range and across potentially multiple platforms of bikes as well. So there's a lot involved to make it come to light and come to market.
Yeah, it's definitely a functional sculpture. It's not necessarily like a car or a toaster where there's function on the inside and then crafted over that. Every tube shape has a function to it. Every bolt and screw has a function to it. And we have an amazing engineering counterparts that we're working with all the time to create the best riding bike, and they have to be functional tools. And the difference between, and it can be 2 degrees of difference that makes all the change in how the bike functions, and it's constantly making that and then testing it. And there could be something that you really want to do from an artistic standpoint, but if it hurts the ride, you have to find that compromise on something that actually functions and looks amazing.
And then on top of that functional sculpture, we manage very carefully the colors and the graphics. It's not a sky's the limit opportunity. We've got some paint schemes that are intentionally applied to weigh as little as 15, 25, 30 grams. It's really common for a paint scheme to have a weight limit applied to it. And then certainly because it is a business, we've got cost limits and quality expectations as well. So that's where the artistry really has to partner tightly with business and technology to make sure that the outcome works at every level.
Looking at this exhibit, I gather with only a few exceptions, and maybe no exceptions, all of the bikes that are on display are both road-ready and are ridden.
Yeah. Yeah, some of there's bikes that
there's
have
mud
been
on them.
Yeah, there's mud on them.
Quite a few of them, actually.
Yeah, they've been ran. One of the bikes, I believe it was one that won the X Games or close to, by some of our professional riders and our professional road riders. Some of them are the personal bikes of the artists that they ride back and forth from work around the city, and they just happen to now be having their break in the art museum. But they're all fully functional. You could ride them right out of the museum.
Yep. That, you ask that, people don't do that, though.
I think that's why they put no pedals on most of them.
The dirt and the grime actually becomes part of the personality of
the
bike.
One of these is your bike.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, for instance, my bike would have looked as good if I hadn't put that mud on it, you know, and I rode it to get the mud on it on a road that you know, the person I designed it for would actually be driving or riding on. It just adds more to the character, and like Trek has lots of bikes like that were raced in significant races by significant riders, and they still have mud caked on them, and somebody would get in a lot of trouble if they hosed them off, you know.
Which has happened before, yeah. Unfortunately. So,
did it take any convincing to take these bikes out of commission for the 3 months that they are out of commission?
Yes. Or they're... I think a lot of people are missing their bikes right now.
Yeah, for
but
sure. The artist bikes.
The artist bikes.
Personal
are,
bikes.
Yeah, a lot of people really... I mean, they became such a personal thing to these people, and so much work went into them. But they're happy that they're getting this attention, for sure. But I know I'm one that's missing the ride, for sure.
And on the flip side, the historical bikes, I'm happy that they're being shown. Because... most of the time, they're sadly just tucked away in storage boxes in a warehouse, and they never get to see the light of day. So it's great to have the opportunity to show some of them.
Even for people who have their eye on design, function, and art, as you do, are there things that you have seen accomplished with the bikes that are here that amaze you?
Certainly. There's things that you can't really appreciate unless you ride them, and unless you've ridden a 15-pound bike, you know, you can't really describe the experience. At an artistic level, one of the bikes in particular by Christina Bybee is just amazing.
This is the one with the gold plating, right?
Yeah, this is the one where she floated ink on top of alcohol and somehow managed to stick it onto a bike frame. It needs to be witnessed to be appreciated, and she accented it with gold-plated componentry, which takes it certainly to the next level. That one we wouldn't have imagined.
Now, has she ridden that bike?
I think
she did a brief christening ride.
I think a lot of the bikes in here look great with mud on them. That's one of the few, I think, that needs to be pristinely polished dusted all the time. It just looks great.
Well, so of all the various parts of a bicycle, what is the hardest to use in an artistic way?
I think wheels.
The lubrication. Wheels can be...
And you have spokes that, you know...
I was going to ask about spokes.
To do anything with them, you kind of have to disassemble them, you know, because the spokes are a nightmare to work around.
The shifting components, the braking components of a bike are all out in the open, so you've got to pay great attention to them while their function is really clear. I mean, those brake calipers, like Ben was saying earlier, don't have a pretty housing around them. They are what they are. Same thing for a chain or the cassette or the derailleurs. So because those elements are so functional and there are so many parts in such a small space, it's really hard to exercise a lot of artistic direction around those components.
Do e-bikes give you a kind of a whole new opportunity? They do look a little...
Opportunity is a good way to say a challenge. It brings up some challenges with the new complexity to it. Electric motors and batteries, the size of it, all of a sudden the size of the tubes are getting a lot bigger.
It's more surface area to treat.
The rider has to interface with this a lot differently. But the amazing part about it is how many new riders it brings in and allows people to ride so much more. And as you saw with our 10-11 pound bikes, weight is always paramount to it, but weight is still an issue with e-bikes, but it's less of an issue now. So all of a sudden, some of those things and conveniences and features that you might have just scrapped before because of weight or because of complexity or because of the need for a battery to be charged are all of a sudden out the window now. So
mountain bikes were 30 years ago. E-bikes are eventually going to turn into a wave in the United States when cost is controlled and when weight is controlled and quality is where everybody expects it to be. There won't be a reason for people to say no to e-bikes. They just make the ride that much more fun.
I feel like that's a subject for an entirely other interview.
That's a great idea.
Well, listen, it's a fantastic exhibit. I'm thrilled to have gotten a chance to see it. And gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mitchell.
We spoke with Graham Reed of the Museum of Wisconsin Art and a bicycle geek himself, along with four members of the Trek Bicycle team, product design director Steve Bauman, senior industrial designers Ben Fullerton and Kurt Hegland, and Project One specialist and historical collection curator Eric Maves.
Joy Ride Designing Trek is on display at the Museum of Wisconsin Art until August. You'll find a link to much more and see some pictures at WUWM.com.